From 90.9 WBUR, this is a special live edition of Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Boston Globe Metro columnist Adrian Walker.
Well, as you can hear, today we're broadcasting live from UMass Boston in a special hour-long debate between City Councilor Ayanna Pressley and Congressman Michael Capuano, the Democratic candidates running in Massachusetts' 7th Congressional District. Today's debate is hosted by WBUR, the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at UMass Boston, and the Boston Globe.
The 7th District encompasses parts of Boston, Cambridge, and Milton, and all of Chelsea, Everett, Randolph, and Somerville. The Democratic primary will be held on September 4th before the general election on November 6th.
And we will get started with this debate in just a moment with candidates' opening statements. But first, I'd like to introduce UMass Boston Interim Chancellor Catherine Newman for a brief welcome.
Good afternoon, diehard fans of democracy, and welcome to the University of Massachusetts at Boston. It is my pleasure to have you here for this important debate. On behalf of the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies, I want to welcome you to our campus. I also especially want to welcome Meghna and Adrian and thank our partners at WBUR and at the Globe for making this debate and our ongoing series of debates possible. We see these debates as central to the mission of democracy. Our campus stands for the idea of freedom of speech, for debate, for hosting different ideas about the central issues of our day. We are a public institution, we stand for the public good, and we look to illuminate significant issues that are on the minds of all of our listeners. I especially would like to thank Dean David Cash, who has been tireless in his effort to organize these debates, and all of our partners here in organizing this distinguished work. And finally, thank you to the candidates themselves, Representative Capuano and Councillor Pressley, for being with us, and your many contributions to public service. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Chancellor Newman. Okay, now it's time for this debate. But a few ground rules before we jump in. Candidates will have 1 minute to respond to the questions that Adrian and I give them, followed by a 1 minute rebuttal from the other candidate. And we, the moderators, will be able to ask follow-up questions of both candidates' responses at our discretion.
And listeners, there are several ways you can participate. We're broadcasting a Facebook live feed of today's event. Go to bostonglobe.com. RadioBoston.org or UMB.edu, as well as on Facebook at WBUR to watch the feed.
And you can also follow along on Twitter. Use the hashtag Matt7Debate. Okay, so let's begin. We'll first hear from Congressman Michael Capuano. He's former mayor of Somerville, serving his 10th term in Congress. He serves on the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure and the House Committee on Financial Services. Congressman Capuano, welcome, and your opening statement, please.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the Boston Globe, WBUR, and UMass for sponsoring this debate. You know, my family and I have lived in this district all of our lives. I still live in the same two-family house just a few blocks from where I grew up. That's why I know, with Donald Trump in the White House, we are in the fight of our lives. He's threatening everything we care about, from health care to the environment, to a woman's right to choose, Social Security, and Medicare. My efforts to stop the Trump agenda have been recognized by many national, well-known, and well-respected independent groups. We've worked closely with local groups as well to fund a lot of improvements to this district, including things like Ruggles Street Station, helping the Young Witness Protection Program, extending the Silver Line, improving the Whittier Street Housing Project, and most of the community health centers. With my experience and my know-how, we can and will do more.
Congressman, your time is up.
How about the Disability Integration Act? People with disabilities are waiting on you, Mike Capuano.
Ladies
right.
And gentlemen,
if
you may, we...
I appreciate
you speaking up. I appreciate you speaking up, but we do need to give the candidates a chance to have their... opening statements. Once again, we very much appreciate the fact that a lot of people have a lot of important issues that they want to be heard and have heard. We're going to talk about as many of them as possible as we can during this debate.
Next up, I'd like to introduce Boston City Councilor-at-Large Ayanna Pressley. Pressley was elected to the City Council in 2009.
Councilor Pressley, we're just going to... It's a tough moment. People do want to be heard, and I appreciate that. But
all right.
We also need to give you both a chance to speak clearly. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hold on. I'd like to introduce Boston City Councilor-at-Large Ayanna Pressley. Pressley was elected to the City Council in 2009, the first woman of color elected to the council, and she chairs the City Council's Committee on Healthy Women, Families, and Communities. She previously worked as a senior aide for Councilor Joseph P. Kennedy II and Senator John Kerry. Councilor Pressley, welcome.
Thank you. First and foremost, I'd like to say that was a demonstration of democracy, and I applaud it and embrace it, and I thank all of you for participating in democracy today. I have dedicated my life to eradicating and addressing issues of income inequality, the wealth and wage gap, structural racism, and gun violence, all issues that are worsening and deepening under our current administration. But truth be told, for the residents of the 7th Congressional District, these systemic inequalities existed long before that man occupied the White House. The 7th Congressional District is one of the most diverse districts, and yet it is also one of the most unequal in this delegation and perhaps even in our country. I'm running because this district deserves, and these times require, bold, activist leadership, a vote, a voice, and a partner. I will be a visionary leader focused on undoing these disparate outcomes throughout the 7th Congressional District. Not just anti-Trump, but a vision for the district.
Thank you both. Thank you. Again, if you could just keep your applause down. Our goal here is really to hear as much as possible from the candidates. So I appreciate your enthusiasm, but we do need to cover as much ground as possible. Before we get to the first question, Councillor and Congressman, I just want to remind both of you that that box there with the lights is your time indicator. Green means you're within your 1 minute. Orange or yellow is your 15-second warning, and red means that your time is up. So be sure to keep an eye on the light box if you could. Go ahead, Adrian.
Let's start with experience and seniority. And the first question goes to Congressman Capuano. Congressman, I want to read you a quote you gave to the Boston Globe back in January of 1999 when you first entered Congress. You were quoted as saying, "I know I can't accomplish much in one or two terms in the minority party, but absent a little thing called elections, I might be here for 8 or 10 years. Congressman, here we are almost 20 years later. You've served 10 terms. Why should voters in the 7th District give you yet another term?"
For the reason I just said, it does take a while to learn how to get things done in Congress. It does take a while to learn how it works, and especially when you're in the minority. And in this particular case, I've been there for a while, and my record speaks for itself. My record both of not just voting the right way, but also advocating for the right things, pushing for the right items, both nationally and locally. That's why I have 100% rating from the NAACP, 100% rating from Planned Parenthood, 100% rating from the ACLU, and on and on and on. Those are not just given out because you happen to just show up and push the right button. It's about leadership, which is why I have the endorsement from people like John Lewis, the Congressional Black Caucus, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, because I fight for the right things. And I tell you that when you do these things, it's also a matter of what you bring home. It's a matter of bringing home money to do Ruggles Station, the Whittier Street Housing Project, to redo almost every single community health center in our district. Those are the kinds of things that do take time to learn how to do. It doesn't mean that I'm the only person who's capable of doing it. It simply means it does take time. And right now, at this time,
I think
this is what this district needs. Somebody who knows how to get things done and fight Donald Trump's agenda.
Councilor Pressley, you have 1 minute to respond.
Well, you know, I'm asking us at a critical juncture in our country and for the 7th and in our democracy to redefine leadership because the times require that we do that. In the last 20 years, this district has changed. The needs of the district have changed. And given what's happening in Washington, the job description has changed. What this district deserves and what these times require is activist leadership, someone that will be a movement and a coalition builder. Because ultimately, a vote on the floor of Congress will not defeat the hate coming out of that White House. Only a movement can, and we have to build it. I would never give short shrift to years of service. I appreciate that. But the Democrats were in the majority, and we had seniority, And how did we leverage it? What did we do with it to specifically address these disparate outcomes in the 7th Congressional District? That is what I am focused on. So seniority and leadership, or leadership rather, can't just be defined by number of years served or how you vote. It's about impact in this district. And finally, I don't think anyone is abdicating their responsibility to lead based on years served. Look at Catherine Clark, Joe Kennedy, Seth Moulton.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you could, please, every five seconds, just Congressman, hold on for a second. Councillor Presley, I just want to follow up with that and give you ask you the next question. You said the district has changed, so let's just hit the nail on the head here. Is race a factor in this campaign, in your candidacy against Congressman Capuano?
Race is a factor in everything. But... Race is a factor in everything. But let me just say this outright, because I have been really furious about these constant charges being lobbied against me of identity politics, which, by the way, are only lobbied at women and candidates of color. I happen to be black and a woman and unapologetically proud to be both, but that is not the totality of my identity. I am a wife. I am a mother. I was a caregiver to my mother end of life with a pre-existing condition. I'm a leader and I'm a problem solver, and that's what this district deserves. However, representation does matter. That is not the impetus for my run, but I'm not going to pretend that representation doesn't matter. But it doesn't matter, so we have progressive cred about how inclusive and representative we are. It matters because it informs the issues that are spotlighted and emphasized, and it leads to more innovative and enduring solutions. That's why it matters. You cannot have a government for and by the people if it is not represented by all of the people.
Am I gonna get a chance to say something?
Would you like to respond to that?
Am I gonna get a chance to respond? I certainly, first of all, agree that race does matter, as does gender identity. Of course they matter. That's why we fight so hard for civil rights and human rights, to make sure that society embraces differences amongst us and recognizes that differences are okay. But as far as the previous question goes, it wasn't a vote that brought money back here to rebuild Ruggles Station. It wasn't a vote that rebuilt all of the community health centers. It wasn't a vote that got the Fairmount line to actually be treated in an equitable way, not built and then treated in an equitable way. That's advocacy. That's advocacy knowing how to get things done, knowing how to get things done for the benefit of this district. Votes are important. And by the way, when Democrats are in the majority, we brought health care to 20 million people. So it does matter. Votes are part of what we do, but advocacy behind those votes and part of those votes is just as important on a regular basis, and my record shows that we do both.
Sure. Can I counter?
Just a second. So, Adrian, sorry, I just want to follow up with the congressman for a second, if I could. You know, I know questions of race and identity they elicit a lot of passions, but we can't fool ourselves into thinking that people aren't reading a lot into this primary battle between the two of you. I mean, I would just want to explore this a little bit because, Congressman, I mean, in February of this year, you were on my program on Radio Boston, and you said at that time, this was after Councillor Presley had announced her run, you said, quote, "I think it's a little unfortunate that we have to spend time and money on a family fight. Look, I cannot be a woman of color, and if that's what people care about, that's fine. I accept that. I understand that. I don't think there are many people who will vote for me because I'm a white male or vote against me because I'm a white male." Do you still think it's unfortunate, and do you count this as a family fight, this primary race?
The answer is yes. As Councillor Presley has said repeatedly, we would probably vote in a very similar manner. And by the way, as we speak right now, there's a special election going on in Ohio in a seat that's held by a Republican that a Democrat has a chance of winning. And when everything's said and done, the issues that we're going to talk about today that we agree on for the most part, the issues I've been fighting for all my adult life, are the issues that are going to require a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives.
How can you have a primary
Donald Trump?
How can you have a primary that doesn't amount to a family fight then?
Say it again?
How can you have a primary, a competitive Democratic primary in Massachusetts?
I don't have any problem having
that doesn't amount to a family fight.
I never had a problem with it. I didn't have a problem when I told you that, but that's what it is. Because in the final analysis, the votes on the floor of the House are going to be, for the most part, the same. The effectiveness of what's behind that vote, I argue, will be different. The votes will probably be the same. I'm not the only one who votes the way I do, even though I do have a pretty unique voting record. One of the few people in Congress who voted against the Patriot Act, one of the few people in Congress who voted against net neutrality, and I'm proud of that record. At the same time, it's also what you do with those votes. Do you just vote for a transportation bill and sit back, or do you jump in and try to take money back to this district to improve the lives of the people that you represent?
Can I respond?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm not giving short shrift to the service of any of the members of this delegation or people that I hope to be my colleagues. What I reject is the notion that because we live in a dark blue district and that people vote the right way, that things are A-OK. There is so much to celebrate in the 7th Congressional District. But I think we have been pawning off the hurt and the pain on one community at a time. I have an equity agenda and a vision for this district. All of the fight for an investment in federal dollars for transportation, when cities like Chelsea are completely transit dependent and can't get on the 111 bus and get to work on time and stand to lose their jobs because of that, means that we have disparities that existed long before Trump that are worsening, and we have to do something about it. We will vote the same way, but we will lead differently. And I will lead in coalition and in partnership with community to spotlight and emphasize new things, like creating a survivor's bill of rights for families who've lost loved ones to gun violence, like raising the issue of maternal mortality and
Counselor,
the stark contrast that it has along race lines,
that's
and a healthcare mecca like Massachusetts.
I'd like to have a response to that.
Just a moment, Congressman.
Congressman,
just a moment.
We just raised transportation.
We are the moderators here. I will give you a chance to respond.
We just raised transportation in Chelsea.
I will
we
give
need
you a
to
chance.
Recognize
we
that
will
5 years ago there was no silver line in Chelsea.
I'm not
the silver line now goes to
Chelsea
to serve.
Ladies and gentlemen, both of you, please. We will give you chances to respond. We
you
will.
Have to give us chances to respond on time.
Well, the rules are a minute each plus moderator
well,
discretion.
That's not what you've done thus far.
We have agreed to the rules in advance.
That is not what you have done thus far.
We will give you a chance to respond. We will.
Rather than debating the rules, why don't we have a debate?
The rules also state moderator discretion as well, because part of our job is to press you when we hear answers that don't fully answer the question. So, Councillor Presley, I would like to ask you. You say you'd lead differently, but ultimately, a congressperson casts votes. That is the means by which decisions are made in the federal government, in the legislative branch. If you're saying there's no meaningful differences in the votes you would cast versus what Congressman Capuano has done, ultimately, what is the meaningful difference in your leadership if you are elected to Congress?
Well, we're not on the floor, and there's not a vote immediately before us. So, you know, I can't offer that. But what I'm saying is that I do bring a different lens and a different approach. And I do believe that my lens, which has been informed not only by my lived experience, but by the people that I actively govern with and have sought out, because I believe for every issue that exists, the solution lives by those that are most impacted. I'm asking us to be bolder. Our country is at a crossroads. The Globe just did a piece a month ago about how we're losing our innovative policymaking standing in the country. We are the birthplace of the abolitionists and suffragettes. We are the birthplace of marriage equality and health care reform. I want to legislate, and I don't want to make a decision to legislate based upon whether or not we're in the majority or we're in the minority. I want to organize, and I want to try. I want to resist, and I want to progress. I don't want to vote no and abdicate my responsibility to organize, to lead, and to legislate. Ted Kennedy dedicated his life to fighting for universal health care, and he didn't put down that mantle and stop that fight based upon what the political landscape is.
That's your
if
time.
If this administration is going to roll back our roads, I'm
time.
Coming at them like a locomotive.
Congressman, your response, please.
The councilor just mentioned transportation in Chelsea. 5 years ago, there was no silver line running into Chelsea. There is today, along with a new commuter rail stop. So transportation in Chelsea has been improved with my help and my advocacy. When you talk about transportation equity, the Fairmont line was virtually non-existent when I took office. Today it has 6 new stops, more service and better service than before. And on top of that, when we found out from a report in the newspaper that they were taking trains out of service on the Fairmont line and sending them out to suburban lines, who fixed that? Who jumped in? That would be me, because I picked up the phone to the FRA and said, you cannot treat minority communities any differently than you treat any other community. So when it comes to transportation equity and the actual delivering of services to the people that elect us, I think my record, based on what was just said that I did not bring up, is exemplary.
That's
and that's
time,
just a part of it. We haven't talked about the other parts of this district, just one, because it was brought up.
Go ahead, Adrian.
You want to do the
can I respond to that?
Yes.
Just quickly, can I say one thing about that?
I'm going to give you 15 seconds because we actually have other issues that we do want to specifically get to.
I just want to say the lens that I bring to transportation is not just about investment in public transit via the T. It is multimodal. We need an investment in rapid bus transit. We need rapid, dedicated bus lanes, protected bike lanes, and I want to invest in not in highways, but in sidewalks. I think I just see the issue of transit differently, and ultimately what I will advocate for is an equitable
Counselor,
distribution of those dollars and multimodal transit.
That's your time. Let's move on.
I want to ask a question about seniority, Councilor Presley. Counselor, if the Democrats take control of the House in November, Congressman Capuano could gain some coveted leadership roles. How would you be able to deliver for the 7th as a freshman congresswoman?
Again, I don't define appreciative of years of service, but I don't define leadership singularly by years served or even committee titles. Ultimately, it's what you do with them and how you leverage them. What I'm focused on is how to address these disparate outcomes and to address the systemic inequality in the 7th Congressional District. And I don't think that I'll be limited. If you look again at Catherine Clark, Seth Moulton, Joe Kennedy, even Elizabeth Warren, and I've proven in my time on the Boston City Council, they asked me, what committee did I want to serve on? When I joined the council, I created my own. And I have championed and spotlighted issues that were never addressed before. When I was elected in the budget cycle, I asked, what are you doing for girls? And no one had an answer. And now they come with binders. That is the impact and the benefit of cognitive diversity in government and someone spotlighting and emphasizing new issues. And finally, I'm not going to be doing this work alone, because I'm bringing the residents of the 7th Congressional District with me. And that's what we need to be doing. That's how we save the ACA, because people organized. And that's how we resist, and that is how we progress.
Time. Congressman, your response? Go ahead, Congressman.
Ted Kennedy was in the Senate for 40 years. Tip O'Neill in the House for 35 years. John Kerry in the Senate for 30-some-odd years. It does take time to become effective. Ted Kennedy was not terribly effective when he first became senator. He became incredibly effective over years because he learned how to work the system. And when it comes time to advocacy, I've already pointed out a whole bunch of them. We can talk about them all day long. But let's talk about some things that most of you probably don't even know. The Office of Congressional Ethics, the first time in the history of the United States Congress when outside people, people from outside the Congress were brought in to judge the activity, the ethical activity or non-ethical activity of members of Congress, that was a law that I drafted and passed. And it was called by the Washington Post the most important reform in ethics in a generation. The Tunnel Safety Act. Now we have the federal government that inspects tunnels for safety, just like they do bridges. Again, first time in the history of the country. The Witness Protection Act. It was based on a story
time,
in Boston.
Time. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to remind you again, please, every second of in applause is a second that you're taking away from the candidate, so let's try to hold that down if we can. Now, I want to move on. You have both mentioned the residents and the voters of the 7th District. Well, WBUR and Mass Inc. actually polled them recently, registered voters who were likely to vote in the primary. The poll asked several questions on key issues, and we want to walk you through some of them and get your responses. For example, the poll asked, do you believe that President Trump should be impeached and removed from office or not? And 69% of respondents said, yes, he should. Congressman Capuano, do you believe the president should be impeached and removed from office?
I'm proud of my two votes in favor of a beginning impeachment hearings in the United States House. As a lawyer and someone who believes in the Constitution, I would not convict anyone without a fair hearing. The fair hearing is to be had in the House of Representatives and judged in the Senate pursuant to the Constitution. I believe the Congress is not doing its job, led by Republicans right now. They're protecting the president from asking important and serious questions. Everything that's reported in the media today relative to Donald Trump and his administration and many members of his family certainly indicate that he has violated several laws. So I firmly believe, I'm proud of my votes, to begin the process of impeachment hearings on this president.
I agree.
Okay, well then let me ask
himself unfit to lead.
Let me ask you a follow-up then. Most 7th district voters polled by WBUR and Mass Inc., 61% of them think Democrats are not being aggressive enough when it comes to standing up to President Trump. So, Councillor Presley, what specifically would you do to be tougher on the president?
Again, it comes down to organizing. I'll give an example. Look at what's happening with Brett Kavanaugh. Yet another demonstration of the fact that elections have consequences. Conservative administrations appoint conservative justices. And with Brett Kavanaugh, the litmus test for his nomination is that he is pro-life. Now, I'm organizing a phone bank to call senators to stop that nomination. If I just made my advocacy end, you know, based upon, I don't know, a statement, or if I made a decision about what could be done based on a sobering and dark landscape, I don't think I'm doing my job. And so I'm going to, listen, if they are coming at us like a locomotive to roll back every civil right and protection that we have fought for decades to earn, I'm going to make it very hard and painful for them to do that. And I'm not going to do that alone. I'm going to do that by organizing and mobilizing, you know, on Capitol Hill, with phone banks, whatever it is that I can do. We have to take it to the streets. It's proven effective. It's why I can stand here and have the right to run right now. Why
That's
I'm being
your
seen
time,
as a
counselor.
Whole person, as a woman, and I have the right to vote.
Go ahead, Adrian.
Congressman Capuano, to follow that, you've both said in past debates that 2016 changed things, and you both consider Donald Trump a major threat to our democracy. Beyond that rhetoric and opposing Trump's agenda at every turn, what else would you like to see the Democratic Party do?
If we take the majority, a lot. I would love to begin quickly with an infrastructure bill, followed up at the same, simultaneously. We can actually walk and chew gum at the same time if we choose to. I would love to deal with the temporary protective status problem that Donald Trump created, the Dreamer problem that Donald Trump created, the problem that he has created on the border, separating infants from mothers. All of that can and should and hopefully will be done by a Democratic majority. Let's throw in a little sensible gun control and, as I said, an infrastructure bill. All of those things can be done quickly. There is relative uniformity in the Democratic Party. I think we'll get some Republicans on those if we can get them to the floor of the House. And I think we can put some pressure on the Senate and the White House to sign those bills. So it's a matter of setting them up right away, not waiting for perfection, but getting done what we can done, get done quickly, and then getting to work on the more difficult things, more like comprehensive immigration reform, fixing the health care system that we have. Those are important things, they're difficult things, and they will take some time to have those discussions and the thoughtful debate. There are some things that we pretty much all agree on that we can and should do quickly, and I think we will.
But we've had Democratic majorities, and we didn't see this kind of action when we had them before. What will be different this time?
My hope is the Democrats learn their lesson. The last time we got bogged down on health care for 18 months, and we needed to get it perfect, they gave away too many amendments, in my opinion, to Republicans who then did not vote for the bill. But President Obama was the leader, and when you have a president in your own party, particularly one whom I supported and I was proud to support, of course you tend to give them a little bit more leeway than you might someone else. So with President Obama at the lead on the health care debate, yes, we did take a little bit too long to do that, and we immediately then turned to the environment, trying to pass a cap-and-trade bill, which we did pass in the House. We could not get passed in the Senate. And then we kind of ran into an election cycle that that's what happens in politics. You get to do something for about 14 to 16 months, and then you get into an election cycle.
Councillor, would you like to respond?
I agree. You know, perfection should not be the enemy of good, but I do believe there are some things I'm unwilling to negotiate on, and that is the rights of immigrants, the rights of workers, and the rights of women. This is why I could not get to a place where I could support any investment in a Trump hate wall. We don't need to be protected from immigrants. We need to be protected from this president. We don't want to be victim to, you know, perfection should not be the enemy of good. But as Democrats, there have to be some things we're just simply not going to negotiate on. And I would also argue that after these elections, we need to have a discussion as a party about who we are. What are our visions? What is our platform? It seems that we're in the midst of some identity crisis negotiating whether or not we're the party of jobs and the economy or of criminal justice reform. This is a false choice. This is not about working class white voters versus everyone else. This is, in this moment, we are asking, Democrats, are you really who we say we are? We've got to get clarity on that, and the rest will follow. But my priorities remain the same, whether we're in the majority or minority.
Well, so speaking of Democrats asking themselves who they are, the WBUR Mass Inc. poll also asked voters in the 7th that if the Democrats win the House in November, one-third of the poll respondents said that they think the party, only one-third, I should say, said that the party should again choose Nancy Pelosi as the Democratic leader in the House. Now, Councillor Presley, this question's for you, because thus far, as far as I can tell, you've refused to join other candidates, and for example, even Congressman Capuano, in calling for Nancy Pelosi's replacement. You said on WGBH at the end of June and on WCVB just this past Sunday that you think it's both premature and that's a conversation for another day. So let's have that conversation today. Would you support Nancy Pelosi as Speaker if the Democrats take the House in November?
My answer remains the same.
Why?
It's a premature discussion.
But why?
I don't know who is going to be in office. We need to get past these midterm elections. We do not have consensus and agreement in this moment on who we even are as a party. So I cannot make a premature decision about who should be leading it. I don't even know who else will be putting themselves forward.
Is Nancy Pelosi doing a good job defining who the Democrats are as a party?
I can't speak to that. I have tremendous respect for Nancy Pelosi and the role that she played in getting the ACA passed, which has saved millions of lives. So for me, it's a premature discussion. What we need to reset and right size is who are we as Democrats, and that will lead the way for who should be leading this party.
Congressman Capuano.
Nancy Pelosi has great skills, and I respect her very, very deeply. At the same time, we need to make sure that we have somebody who can get 218 votes on the floor of the House. That's the most important thing, because you have to understand, in Congress, it is the majority party led by the Speaker that sets the agenda. That's why we can't get gun control bills on the floor, not because there aren't the votes for it, but because we can't get the Speaker to put them on the floor or allow them on the floor. To have the right Speaker is absolutely critical, and to have the right Speaker requires them to get 218 votes. Right now, based on what you just said, we have many Democrats running across this country who have said they will not vote for Nancy Pelosi. So we have to wait to see which Democrats get elected. We have to wait to see who actually runs for Speaker. And we have to wait to see what the options are when we get there. So for me, I've said repeatedly over time, I really respect Nancy Pelosi very deeply. At the same time, the most important thing to me is not about an individual. It's about an agenda. And the agenda, as far as I'm concerned, needs to be pushed forward effectively by the person who can do it. And that won't be able to be determined until after the election.
But to be clear, though, Congressman, you have called for her replacement in the past. And you voted
You
voted for her challenger in 2016, right?
I have, because we lost 60 seats. And I kind of like when you get rid of the manager of the Red Sox when they lose 60 games. You kind of have to, not because they're bad. Our manager went to Cleveland and became a great manager. I mean, there are different times and different situations for different people. That's the judgment that I have. And as far as I'm concerned, this year, we'll see what the situation is when the time comes.
Go ahead, Adrian.
Go ahead.
I would also just add that in many ways I do believe that our campaign is meeting head-on the challenge and the charge that we were given coming out of 2016, and that is to ignite this electorate and to expand it. The median person volunteering on this campaign every day, and they just come in off the streets, is 19 years old. So if we want to invigorate this party, if we want to have a blue wave throughout this country, we need to stop the hemorrhaging of youth, women, and people of color from this party. And the millions of others who don't feel included and seen. That is how we usher in a blue wave. It is by movement and coalition building. It is by restoring people's hope. It is by being a partner. It is about redeeming their relationship with government and letting them know that they are seen. The average contribution on my campaign is $64. I have people who are homeless who have invested $1, who volunteer every day because it's the first time they have felt seen and a stakeholder in their government. This is a fight for the soul of our party and the future of our democracy. And until we reset that, the rest of this is putting the cart before the horse.
I'd like to move on to a question about immigration. The WBUR poll also last week also found that just 21% of respondents said they believe immigration and customs enforcement should be abolished. 64% said it should be reformed. Congressman Capuano, you've championed the fact that you voted against the original ICE authorization. Now you think it needs some serious reforms. What specific reforms would you like to see?
The first reform is to get rid of Donald Trump, because he's the one who tells them what policies to enact. And that, to me, is the most important thing. His policies, as enforced by ICE, have been the main focus of my issues when it comes to immigration. I do a lot of immigration work in my office. We have a very diverse district, as everybody knows. We have people from all around the world, many of whom have immigration issues. And when they come to my office, their first and foremost thing is about how they can be helped themselves. It's not about the organizational chart of the DHS or ICE or anybody else. It's about personal issues, how they can help their family get here, how they help their family stay here. To me, that's the focus. That's why I went to the border in Texas. I went down there to see what they were doing, see how they were doing it, talk to the people that are being separated from their children right now, ask them personally whether they knew where their children were, and on and on and on. And I was appalled by what I saw. I was appalled by the answers I got. The fact that we have a government right now that doesn't even know where some of these children are or where some of these parents are. I think that's the focus we need to have, is on the individuals that are being harmed by these policies.
Councillor Plessy, I'm going to give you your minute follow-up here, your minute rebuttal. But just to reiterate, the poll found that only 21% of respondents in the 7th say they believe ICE should be abolished. Now, you have called for the abolition of ICE and the relocation of some of its functions elsewhere in the Department of Homeland Security and the defunding of its enforcement and removal functions. So given that 21% number we're quoting here, are you out of step with how your potential constituents view ICE?
Well, these polls tend to undersample the electorate, and especially voters of color, so I'm not sure how accurate that is. But notwithstanding that, my decision was not one that I arrived at casually, and it was not one that was informed by any poll. It was informed by the people that I'm in close proximity every day, the advocates in immigrant and refugee spaces who have been doing this work for years, like Centro Presente and MIRA and the ACLU. This agency, for two administrations, has been dogged by many of these allegations. And I do not think it is an agency that can be reformed from the inside out. We have other agencies that have inefficiencies that aren't on their job, and I haven't called for them to be abolished. We are at a watershed moment when we are ripping children from the arms of their parents, and the president has to be ordered to not give children psychotropic drugs. But I'm the one that's tripping. This is a zero-tolerance policy.
Ladies and gentlemen, please, if I may. Yeah, that's your time, Counselor. Again, see, taking a few seconds away from the candidates. I just need to take a moment here to remind those folks listening or watching online and on the air that this is a special edition of Radio Boston, live from Campus Center at UMass Boston. We're having a debate between Democratic candidates for the 7th Congressional District in Massachusetts, sponsored by WBUR, UMass Boston's McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies, and the Boston Globe. And in fact, for the next question, if I may welcome David Cash, Dean of the McCormick Graduate School here at UMass Boston, he has a question for the candidates. Dean Cash, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Meghna, and thank you, candidates. This relates to some of the things that you've been talking about. The Massachusetts 7th, as has been said, is one of the most diverse congressional districts in the country. Parts of it were represented by our namesake John W. McCormick, who was Speaker of the House of Representatives in the 60s and 70s. McCormick was a master at bringing factions together to solve problems of economic and political equity and get major pieces of legislation passed. You're both legislators. What have you done to demonstrate that you can work productively with diverse factions to solve the social challenges of the day?
Congressman Capuano, go ahead.
I am really proud to represent one of the most diverse districts in the country. And diversity is just that, diversity. There is a majority of no one in this district, no race, no ethnicity, no religion, no, nothing. So anybody who sits in this seat has to be able to work with people that don't look like them, people that don't think like them, people that don't worship like them, and has to be able to bring people together. That is the hallmark of not just a legislator, but an executive or a school committee person. Anybody in public life who represents more than two or three people has to be able to bring in diverse people to talk to. And that's on every issue. You're not going to get uniformity of opinion on transportation, on civil rights, on immigration, on health care. Even in Greater Boston, where we all agree on certain premises and principles like housing, we all agree on it. We will still have our differences as to how to fund it, where to place it, who's to be eligible for it. And to me, I'm very proud of the record that I've accomplished being able to bring people together on a regular basis on every issue under the sun to have those discussions and those debates.
Councillor Presley?
Well, I think in my time on the council, I've certainly proven my ability to get along with everyone. I've been on the council now 8 years. I'm in my fifth term, still decisively earning almost 60,000 votes, and was a top vote getter for 3 consecutive elections. And so I hope that is proof that my agenda is one that is resonant and transcendent to people from many different walks of life. I'm also proven in tackling some very complex social issues, issues that many consider to be third rail and polarizing, and bringing people together to reach consensus and to make laws to address these systemic inequalities. I worked for some 4 years to reform our state's liquor license laws, working with the city council, 2 mayors, and our state legislature to disrupt what was a 2-tiered food system, resulting in a density of walkable amenities and restaurants in neighborhoods like the North End, the Back Bay, and the South End, and neighborhoods like Roxbury, Mattapan, and Dorchester, and Hyde Park, which did not have new restaurants for 10, 15, 20 years. I also led the fight on the municipal level to ensure that there would be equity in the emerging cannabis industry. That is not an issue of which there was consensus. And finally, getting comprehensive sex ed and condoms into our schools.
Go ahead, Adrian.
I want to ask about inequality in the 7th District, which has come up a couple of times already. According to the latest census figures, more than 20% of the district lives below the poverty line. The median household income in the 7th is a little over $60,000 a year. But what those numbers don't show are the vast differences between parts of the 7th. The median household income in Kendall Square in Cambridge is more than $78,000. In Roxbury, it's about $30,000. Councilor Presley, you are on your 4th term in the city council. What has the council done over that time to address the issues of inequality in the city?
Well, I just cited some of the things that I specifically have led on, and I don't believe that any of these issues can be addressed in a silo. There's an intersectionality in issues. This is one of the reasons why I'm running. So very often when we talk about the wage gap, everyone will talk about that they support the fight for 15. That isn't enough. And so we have to address these issues holistically. So one of the things that I'm focused on is how do we support our informal economies, our restaurants, our bodegas, our beauty salons, our barbershops, our home and community-based childcare providers. These are the businesses that are disproportionately owned by women, immigrants, and people of color. They represent 30 to 40% of our main streets, and I want to help to destabilize their workforces. I want to get them at a living wage. But we have to right-size all these other issues. It's access to reliable, affordable, and quality child care. It's rapid and reliable, accessible, and affordable transit. It's access to a quality school system. It's housing that is affordable. So there's an intersectionality of all of these issues. But when it comes to inequality and specifically where the wealth and wage gap are concerned, these are the ways
That's
that I've been focused on addressing that issue.
Congressman Capuano, your follow?
Congress has not done enough, especially with Donald Trump. The worst thing we've done in a while is the tax bill that Trump just passed. It completely made all of these problems even worse by giving the wrong people the tax cuts, using the tax dollars that we pay in the wrong way. As far as what we have done, the ACA, Obamacare, that's one of the main focuses towards it, is to try to level that playing field with people that cannot afford health insurance by providing it for them. Housing. We did a housing bill. Part of the Dodd-Frank bill included an affordable housing trust fund. That whole concept is to try to provide way to help people with affordable housing, especially with the federal government slowly walking back their commitment to affordable housing. Things like unionization rules. Unions help people rise up from lower-income jobs, and we try to strengthen them and protect them from the Trump tax. The American with Disabilities Act, we had a little demonstration here earlier on part of that. The ADA was under attack for years, and most of us tried to defend it and did defend it successfully. Those are things that do help. I couldn't agree more that Congress could and should do more, and hopefully we will do more with the Democratic majority.
So, Congressman Capuano, there are some buildings in the 7th, which I think epitomize the challenges of inequality and housing that your constituents or Councillor Presley's potential constituents face. And we're thinking about 1 Dalton Street. It held its topping off ceremony this morning. It's a Four Seasons hotel with private residences, a 61-story tower, 3rd tallest building in the city. It's in the 7th. Average cost of a unit there, $6 million. The penthouse is $40 million. Is Boston building too many luxury housing units?
Each city has to make their own determination. From what I know of the city of Boston, they're doing yeoman's work in expanding the amount of affordable housing they have. Each city makes that determination. I actually think that's one of the shortcomings of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, is I think the state should actually require certain communities to do more. I know that most of the communities in my district, Somerville, Cambridge, Boston, do more than their fair share of relative to affordable housing, but we can't do it alone. We need to have affordable housing across the state, not just in a few communities. So I don't know, but I do know this particular project. I'm not going to be living there. Couldn't imagine even thinking about it. But I do think that cities can do more. From what I know, Boston is doing reasonably well, but I would expect that Councillor Presley would know more about the details of what Boston is doing on this issue than I would.
Counselor? Go ahead, Councillor.
Do you mind repeating the question?
Is Boston building too many luxury housing units?
Yes. If 50% of the population is making $37,000 or less, and we're still struggling with how to define affordability in large part because our AMI is informed by suburbs like Brookline. This is one of the reasons why I'm running. Not only do I think that one of the ways we address inequality is to tie the fight for 15 and minimum wage to the cost of inflation, but I think on the federal level that we should reform the area median income. It would give us a greater leverage with developers and pushing them to develop housing that is truly affordable. But again, these issues don't exist in a silo. You know, the average renter, which is what most people in Boston are doing, is paying sometimes 60% of their income towards rent. That's why I love innovative legislation put forth by Senator Kamala Harris, a rent relief act, where if you're making under $100,000 a year, but more than 30% of your income is going towards rent, you get a tax break. These are some of the creative things we need to look at. Also, Massachusetts is number two in the country when it comes to child care costs, almost $17,000 a child.
Go ahead, Adrian.
I want to ask about transportation. Issues of funding and leadership at the federal level. Congressman Capuano, you sit on the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. You know the Federal Highway Trust Fund relies heavily on fuel taxes, but those tax rates haven't increased since 1993. Why was Congress unable to raise revenue for highways during the years when Democrats were in the majority?
Simply put, raising taxes is anathema to many members of Congress, starting with pretty much every Republican and more than a handful of Democrats. I have supported, I would say, most proposals to increase revenue towards transportation. I think the average American supports it. There was no problem here in Massachusetts when they raised the gas tax in order to put money into transportation and infrastructure. I believe it's something like 30 states have done something similar on the state level. The federal government can and should do it. And of all the issues in the world, it is one of the very, very few that even the United States Chamber of Commerce thinks we should raise revenue for the purpose of infrastructure. And by the way, the last time the gas tax was raised, the President of the United States who did it, who doubled the tax at that time, was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan prized himself as being a person who didn't raise taxes, yet even he knew that investments in infrastructure are good for the economy, good for America, good for working Americans, and should be done.
Before, Councilor, I'll let you have a follow-up, but Congressman, let me just ask you, in order to create the transportation infrastructure that Massachusetts, the seventh, that America needs for the 21st century. I mean, given that Congress will not raise that federal gas tax rate, would you support other funding models, more public-private partnerships for highways, airports, et cetera, or even more significant privatization? And if not, where is the money going to come from? Congressman, that was a follow-up for you.
To me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Look, I support pretty much all of the above, whatever we can get 218 votes for, as long as it's dedicated towards infrastructure. Public-private partnerships are not going to work. We've had a special study of which I was a chair on that came up with, look, it works once in a while. There are certain places it does, but for the most part, it won't work very often. There are many other ways to do it, not the least of which we start from changing what Donald Trump just did last year with his tax bill. That $1.5 trillion could have been used as an investment in this country, either through transportation or education or housing or any other issues you might want to argue with. Transportation is certainly one of them, and many of us advocated for that. So right now, yeah, there are a lot of us advocating for it. And by the way, the gas tax is something we're probably going to have to move off of over time because fuel efficiency is going up. Donald Trump's trying to stop it, but we'll get back on that in a short period of time. Fuel efficiency is going up. More people are driving electric vehicles that don't pay the gas tax. They still use the roads. We're going to have to find a new way to do it. Oregon has been doing a mileage tax. It's relatively experimental. There are many other proposals on the table to provide funding, and I think every one of them deserves to be considered.
Councillor Presley, go ahead. You have
Well, again, there's work to be done in Washington, but there's also work to be done in partnership here with community, and I've been partnering with coalitions to lobby our governor to make an investment in public transit and our infrastructure and to not privatize this T and to raise fares on the burdens and the backs of working class people. When it comes to transit, again, the lens that I bring to this is one of equity and fighting for an investment in multimodal transit and supporting the needs of communities that are transit dependent, who take the bus not because they choose to, but because it is the only choice they have. And that transit needs to be rapid, it needs to be reliable, it needs to be affordable. Governor Baker killed a study to look at the inequities in the system across the Commonwealth. And if we knew truly, if we could quantify what those disparities are, we live them. But if we could quantify them, then we could better dedicate dollars and investment. Public-private partnerships, I think, are creative and something that we should consider. We did not have much success with that with late-night tea service, and so it was hard for that to be something that is sustainable. But I do think that we should be looking at everything. But first and foremost, to me as a representative, would be
That's
to lean in and to lobby our governor.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask a question about the Fairmount line, which is the only commuter rail route that goes entirely within the city, and it goes through Mattapan, Hyde Park, and Dorchester. Councillor Presley, how would you further support the growth of the Fairmount line?
Well, first, I do just want to, you know, I acknowledge the congressman's point earlier, but that one-time investment is not a fix for the larger issues relative to transit equity in this part of the city. What I would support is a greater investment in development along that corridor, not only in workforce housing, but also in business and industry. And ultimately, I think that's what will allow for sustainable ridership. But again, if we, you know, had a transit equity study, it would further spotlight these issues and whether or not they are coming down based on access or whether it's because the fares are too expensive. I also support two things: low-income people paying a lower fare, and I've proposed in my equity agenda that if you are eligible for SNAP benefits, then you should also be eligible for transit subsidies, traveling to school and work.
Councilor Capuano, Congressman Capuano.
I there was a lot more to the Fairmount line than just a one-time investment. The Fairmount line was a long-term investment, working with Governor Patrick at the time, because if people remember, there were only a few stops that were almost never used. We've now increased it by six stops, all brand-new stops, all of them been new. We've got better trains on the system. And let's not forget that the people running the commuter rail were taking trains out of service on this line to give to other lines. That has stopped. This line now has as reliable service as anyone else, no better, no worse. That's a different issue. And I couldn't agree more. I think the development on this line comes in a heartbeat. That will help a lot, but so does reliability. And when everything's said and done, when we brought that to the T, they changed the way they make the counts on these lines. Every other commuter rail line is counted at North Station and South Station, because almost everybody who uses a commuter rail line actually just goes to full transit. The Fairmount line is different. People get on and off at different
That's
stops. They
time.
Use it more like a subway. It needs to be treated more like a subway.
Before we move to the final portion of today's conversation, I just want to ask both of you one last question on transportation, and that's about the Green Line extension, expected to open in 2021, years behind schedule. Now, Congressman, according to the Boston Globe, you've attended four groundbreakings for this project. What makes this time different? The latest was at the end of June.
This time, all of the T's have been crossed and all of the I's have been dotted. The federal government has actually written hundreds of millions of dollars of checks to the project. It is now beyond the time and the ability to actually stop it in any fiscally sound manner. So therefore, that's the difference. In the past, every time we've done a groundbreaking, there have still been hurdles in front of us that we knew could stop the project. Those days are past. This project is going forward. And by the way, it will go forward with a full community path bike lane going all the way from the beginning down past Leachmere and hopefully eventually relatively soon all the way to North Station. That's what we need. We need safe modes of not just the subways, but also commuter rail, also bikes and alternative transportation systems. And they are taken into account every time we do an investment. And I think that's the right way to go.
Councilor, nothing
to add. All right, great. Go ahead, Adrian.
Last question on this subject to Councilor Presley. Are there any areas in which you could work together with Donald Trump and the Republicans?
Absolutely, I can work with anyone in the name of progress. I've just, you know, shared earlier the things I'm unwilling to negotiate on. An issue that infrastructure, but a priority of mine if we are in the majority or in the minority is criminal justice reform. I do believe that finally there is a bipartisan appetite for this, I think for different reasons. One side is focused more on the economic cost and impact, and I'm more focused on the social toll and impact, but criminal justice reform. And on the housing front, specifically, just to talk about a different lens that I bring, one of the things that I want to prioritize is housing that is CORE friendly. Because of policies that get in the way of successful family reunification, 30% of our chronically homeless have criminal records. They are, in fact, being released from institutions to shelter. And so you can't tell people, we want you to make a positive contribution, and we know the recidivism is the number one contributor to unemployment, but then we don't give people a place to call home. There's a model in New York that I'm looking to pilot, and that is to create CORE-friendly housing. So criminal justice reform is an issue I'd like to work on our infrastructure.
Thank you. Congressman Capuano?
I keep looking for one. So far, no luck. Even on criminal justice reform, we did think we were getting close to it, but all of a sudden the rug got pulled out from under us. And it wasn't going to be a great proposal, but it was going to be something. We have worked with the sheriffs on trying to find ways to improve it. We've worked with our local police departments to try to find ways to improve it. There are lots of good ideas out there, but until we can get somebody on the other side of the aisle to be a partner with us, we're not going to make much progress. Unless Democrats take over the House. If we do that, not just criminal justice reform, on everything. I thought maybe we could work with the President when it came to some immigration issues. I thought maybe the Senate tried to do it. I thought maybe there was some possibility of dealing with him relative to infrastructure. He made great promises during his campaign on infrastructure, and then he made a proposal of a bill that even Republicans ran away from. So thus far, unfortunately, the answer is no, but I'm going to keep looking for one. I hope we find one. Based on a year and a half of experience, I don't have a lot of hope, but hope springs eternal, and we're going to keep
trying. That's your time. All right, well, this has been quite a bracing hour. We have just enough time for closing statements, and please do limit them to the 1 minute. Ayanna Pressley, Councillor Pressley, you get the first shot at the closing statement. You have 1 minute.
All right, well, thank you all for participating in democracy this afternoon, and thank you to our venerable moderators. The policies coming out of Washington are meant to divide us and to make us feel small, but I believe in the power of us, and I have seen that finally we are understanding that we are one human family and our destinies are tied. I've seen it on the commons organizing for women's rights. I've seen it at City Hall Plaza rejecting zero tolerance policies. I see it now as people are organizing for trans rights and accommodations at the ballot box. We finally get it that our destinies are tied, and so we have a choice. We're at a crossroads, and this can go down as the darkest, most draconian time in our history, or together, we can usher in the most inclusive, progressive, change-making movement in our history. And I want to remind you of the history of the 7th congressional seat. This is a dark blue district, a seat that was held by JFK. It will never be represented by a Republican. You know what that means? That we can be bold, that we can be unrestrained, that we can be innovative, that we can be unencumbered. And so I'm running because I want to be a vote, a voice, and a partner to lead, organize, and legislate to change the outcomes of this district from being the most diverse and yet the most unequal.
Councillor, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please. Congressman Capuano, your closing statement. Go ahead.
Thanks, the host, for having us today. As I said at the beginning, my family and I have lived in this district our whole life. I still live in the same two-family house just a few blocks from where I grew up. That's why I know that we really are in the fight of our lives with Donald Trump in the White House. Everything we believe in, everything we talked about today is under attack. Healthcare, housing, transportation, tax policy, immigration policy, everything. My efforts to defend these policies and to fight against the Trump administration have been recognized by nationally recognized and respected organizations like the NAACP, Planned Parenthood, NARAL, NOW, AARP, and the Human Rights Committee campaign. They've also earned me endorsements from people like John Lewis, from people like the Congressional Black Caucus, Congressional Hispanic Caucus, many local people, including every mayor in this district. This particular race is about electing the person who can be most effective for this district, because we do generally agree on most issues. And if you want somebody who's effective, somebody who knows how to get things done, and who can be successful and proven successful against Donald Trump's agenda, I ask for your vote on September 4th.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're down to the last 15 seconds of this broadcast, so I just want to thank both Councillor Pressley and Congressman Capuano. Thanks to this audience. Thank you to my wonderful co-moderator, Adrian Walker of the Boston Globe. Don't forget to vote in the primary.
That's right.
And that's it for this debate. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.